Hello.
Hello.
Stuart. Mike. Stu. Ken.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, Mike Banner?
Yeah, not too bad. A little bit snoozy, but okay.
I was going to say, is this the case of good evening, Ken, and good morning, Mike?
Yeah, well, it's 1:30 a.m. here.
Right on. So we can do it. We can do it sexy then, Mike. This show.
The night is young.
Sexy.
Yeah, let's sexy it up, man.
Yeah, I wasn't quite ready for that, but okay.
Well, yeah, I've been on for quite some time. You know, shit's gone on here. Shit's gone down here, sort of.
Ken's fucked up, Mike. He's gone. Sleaze has taken over.
Don't mind the smell.
Like some kind of brain tumor. Sleaze,
yeah, but
thanks very much, man.
Sleaze tumor.
I like that much, much better, though.
Man, that's put me off my dinner lights.
Yeah, I thought I'd just add, basically edit in just some unstructured chit-chat just to make it, per definition, a trio show. So this is a kind of part of the show, Mike, but we'll actually, when you and I chat, we'll go from the start, as per the outline I wrote. So this is just, you know, the first time the three of us have spoken since February, I think.
Something about that.
Yeah, the episode Mikecast 2011 was published at that time, so it's late January, early February, kind of. So time flies. You know what I remember from that night, out of all things? Not that it was a special occasion, but I remember recording the first This Week in Sleaze, like the hours before the three of us joined up. So it was an hour, you know, a Friday of podcasting, dual podcasting, which was good fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Yeah, obviously the time difference is a bit of a shitter for me.
Yeah.
But at my current school, I don't work Fridays.
Hmm.
Which means that Thursday nights are sometimes doable.
And that'll be good if you can adjust to us, sort of, then we'd appreciate it, but, you know.
Let's see how it goes.
And you're talking to an upcoming elite projectionist, Mike. Stu. He's been trained.
Yeah, I gathered that from Facebook. You've been inserting subliminal messages into the films.
No, just pictures of my dick.
Fine.
Iron brew. For two frames, you know.
Mm. I think really the only feedback I've had so far from inserting photos of my genitalia into the children's movies is that I should really see a doctor about the lump. It wasn't the reaction I was expecting. I'm more worried than anything now, but that's fine. I'm not on any register yet.
I was naive to the point that I didn't think they were screening via film anymore. But I guess they do, obviously.
It's because we're like a small charity joint where we basically took anything that we could get.
Right.
So I have got like a recycled old 35mm projector.
Right.
But
on.
It does come around that, like, all films are still coming out in 35mm, but they're just limited. Because everything's on fucking hard drives now.
Yeah.
And they're all fucking like £80,000 digital projectors.
Well, as long as the system is working, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why change? It's not like you're getting, you know, brown or green looking 35mm prints that are watchable. You know, it's still good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ease of use, right? Because usually, 35mm film comes on different reels, and then I should know more about this. You'd have to like group them all together and stuff.
Aye. We'd build all the films up a few days before, do a test run. Like, it's sort of built onto like a tower, so you cut the film into one big film. So, and then at the end, you break it back down into separate pieces. Like that fucking Harry Potter film I've been dealing with. Is like eight reels of film, which is a fucking ton to lift.
Didn't especially you do a double bill the other night too? Of several Harry Potter movies?
Aye, they're double back to back.
Fucking
so when
hell.
One finished, there's a gap. luckily the tower actually has enough room, like, it has sprockets on each side where you can load one film onto one and then up onto the other. So one side was playing part one, when that finished we turned the machine around and loaded up part two.
Right.
So, but I'm a long way for getting any decent, well, way out of it. It's maybe like a new career path, hopefully, because the one I'm on the news is pretty shit. So I'm just hoping to learn the skills and then kill the head projectionist and then take over.
As these things go.
Yes. I will continually treat him with pints of Best and spicy mince pizzas until his heart explodes.
and then you'll put it up on YouTube. Oh.
That's certainly a long-term plan, Stu.
Yes. Well, he is in his early 60s, so I think I can work up. I see that there is like a wee spiral staircase. Does anyone remember that scene from Election with Wong Tin Lam?
One of those narrow, narrow fucking things for a big, big, big guy. That's a match made in heaven.
Yep, and it's fucking identical here. So when I get arrested and the newspapers go mental, it's not going to be pictures of Choi Min-sik with a hammer. It's just going to be like fucking Johnny Toad's Election plastered over the newspapers. The films were violent. They told me to do it. I didn't want a better job, really.
Maybe you could just start deep frying everything.
Yes.
Deep fry the pizza, deep fry the beer.
Oh no, I thought that would mean how you could get rid of the evidence, like deep fry the projectionist. that's a better idea.
Bun man stew. The untold story.
Well, I figured if you're gonna, like, you know, slowly kill him with food and beer, add an extra level of fat.
Yes.
Is a bit quicker. Because you can actually get deep-fried cola.
Fucking deep-fried sweets. Seems to be a sickly choice over here. A deadly poison.
Oh, sounds so appetizing. When you put it like that. Deep-fried. No, it's hard. It's hard sounding. It's sounds gritty. As this world is, it's gritty. Cheers, Stu, for coming on, and the trio reunited, albeit for only 10 minutes. But that means we can play the regular intro. So This is a good time to cue the intro. See what I did there?
Yeah.
You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
So, welcome back to Podcast on Fire after the trio talk. They disbanded again. And now it's only a duo left. And it's me, Kenneth Bolson, your host for this evening. And Mike Banner, say hello properly for the first time since episode 87.
Hello.
Live from Korea, or recorded from Korea. The co-host of the Podcast on Fire Network, for fuck's sake. People tend to forget. People tend to forget that. And also, since we represent you in the form of a ninja on the site. You know, your picture is you in a ninja outfit.
Yeah.
So no wonder you're kind of a covert incognito.
I was quite pleased with that, actually.
That was good. Was that a Halloween thing from some year, or just a regular night?
Regular night, but those pictures happened to be taken on Halloween.
Right. Well, it's a better ninja than most of the ninjas I watch and like. You know, the brightly coloured ninjas with the word ninja written on their headbands. You're a bit
only cost me about, like, $30 to put that together as well.
Wow. Could have made it yourself.
I could have been a costume designer back in the 60s in Taiwan or something.
Well, as soon as they invent time travel, you can right wrongs. So we're doing a regular Podcast on Fire, and Stu is, of course, as you heard, attending the Tyler Durden course in movie projection. So right about now, we should he should have finished splicing four frames of huge erect cocks into a Harry Potter movie or two. And if he ever comes back, we'll know he succeeded at that terrorism, that minor terrorism. But regardless, before we catch up properly with Mike, we'll run through the contact information. And it's the show is Podcast on Fire, located on the Podcast on Fire network, which is podcastonfire.com. And you'll reach the forum on said site, which is podcastonfire.com/forum, where the ever so lovely and growing members only archive of hours by now of outtakes and silliness and exclusive movie reviews is there for your listening pleasure, so you can extend the POF experience if you register on the forum, which is free. And we started initially doing these members only as just silliest sides outtakes. For instance, one of the first ones when Stu couldn't say third window films right, he sort of got hung up on films. Third world films, which is and Stu was the first one to welcome that to the world. He didn't want to delete that forever, so he stood by his mental hang up, I guess. you just get stuck sometimes, what I mean? Your dog is in one of the outtakes as well, early on.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but alright.
Yeah, there was a dog apparently. There was an animal in the background. We're on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/POF network. Reach us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. And my contact information, I'm the head writer and creator of SoGoodReviews.com, your one stop for Guaylo Ninjas, Category 3, Hong Kong, Taiwan, old school horror, your Black Magic movies, your Boxer's Omen, what have you, Killer Snakes, and sometimes some new wave drama from Hong Kong. Taiwan Black movies as well. I'll explain a little bit more to you, Mike, why that expression is circulating around the Podcast on Fire network. But all of that is, anyway, video reviewed at sleazykvideo.com. And I'm also reachable on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. And the final thing for the entire network, you can, of course, subscribe to our iTunes feed and leave us some comments on iTunes if you like the show. And also, we're reachable on Stitcher Radio, the free application for your computer and your smartphone. So you can search for the Podcast on Fire network on Stitcher Radio, favorite the entire network, and listen to the recent shows, the later shows and the recent shows, whenever you like. It's a great little free application that we're privileged to be on as well. So Stitcher Radio, stitcherradio.com, or stitcher.com rather. Do you have one of those fancy smartphones, so you've tried out the Stitcher app, Mike?
No, I have a crummy Korean dumb phone.
Well, as long as it's working and you can't make calls, then there's no need for a smartphone.
Yeah, well, I'm a big nerd for gadgets, so I do want to get a smartphone. Yeah. But because, it's boring and complicated, but I can't actually get one at the moment.
Well, there's always new ones coming out left or right, so, wait for the iPhone 5 or whatever brand you've been eyeing. I don't know if you even like Apple products.
They're all right. Overrated, if you ask me, but they're all right.
Nice designs, at least. But that's the contact information for the Podcast on Fire network. So I guess one got to ask, because listeners sure are wondering, and I'm wondering, although I keep up with you on Facebook, what is there to say about what's been up since we last spoke 6 months ago?
Not much.
All right, next question.
Not much really. Just yet. Working still. My day job is an English teacher. That's about it. My night job is drinking beer most of the time. That's the lifestyle of the English teacher. Lots of pub visits and idle chit-chat.
No idle chit-chat? You haven't encountered any celebrities in Korea?
Well, apart from bumping into Choi Hark, which I think I must have mentioned before. Mm-hmm. That's my only celeb spot so far.
Yeah.
I bought an Xbox. This is proper general chit chat. I got an Xbox. No, nothing interesting. Oh, I wish there was. I've been studying as well. Uh-huh. For a degree. That's about it. Planning my next potential move, my next hope, which could possibly be Hong Kong at the moment.
Right on. So that spurs the question, how's your Korean after being there 1.5 or 2 years now? How long is it actually? Is it 2 years already?
About a year and 7 months, something like that.
Right.
I made good strides in the first year, but then I kind of became lazy, to be honest. I can order food and order stuff in a shop and ask for directions and basic kind of little conversations and questions, I understand. Mm-hmm. So I've got enough to get by on.
Well, that's certainly stuff that it's easier to pick up while doing it, while in the thick of it, rather than sitting down trying to learn Korea from, a language course on tape. That's just my way of looking at it. I'm not good at picking up languages, but how about you? How do you work in that regard?
I did use MP3, so I used to listen to every day. I used Rosetta Stone a little bit. And then just picking stuff up from kids at school and teachers and other English teachers and random stuff like that. I can read and write, so that kind of helps as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, read and write Korean. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I mean, I'm certainly not good enough to watch a movie at the cinema. Mm-hmm. Or anything like that, but I think next week I will actually be going to watch a Korean movie, sort of a Korean movie, for the first time at the cinema here for a good reason.
Uh-huh. And that is?
I don't know if you want to get to that now or in a bit, but...
You can tease us if you like.
Well, it's the new film from Kachia Pinkow, I don't know how to pronounce it, the director of Ong Bak.
Which would be
The Kick.
Ah.
It's starring a bunch of Korean Taekwondo experts, and it's a think Thai and Korean co-production.
All right.
Well, I've got here for you, your viewing pleasure, Ken, the trailer, if you want to watch it.
Seems like a modest name for the movie, The Kick, rather than, Assault Kick, Fatal Kick, Lethal Kick.
It's a pretty crappy name, to be totally honest, I think. Yeah.
Do you know the Korean title, what it translates as? Have you looked into it?
Yep. Yeah, the Korean title says there is The Kick. it's just the English title translated into Korean.
No poetry there.
Nope. But like I said, it's a Thai Korean production. Mm-hmm. And it's set in Thailand, as far as I know, and obviously I'm guessing most of the crew would have been Thai. But the main actors are Korean.
Right. Jija, apparently in it. According to this cast list on YouTube anyway. Jija Janine, is that the chocolate girl?
I didn't know she was in it. Maybe she's a bit of a cameo or something.
They list her third in the cast list, so it might be...
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. To be honest, I don't know a lot about it. I've just been keeping an eye out for trailers and stuff. And then you can see her in the trailer and Mum... Dropbox or Pitch Time, One Cam Lab, who's the chunky funny man who's in all of most of Tony Jaa's films.
And elephants. So we know it's Thai then. Speaking of that, recently there was a release on the Swedish DVD market of maybe not a classic Thai movie, but a Thai movie nonetheless called The Killer Elephants. Which is a movie that IFD bought and dubbed and distributed as is. There were no ninjas cut into it. So that one was just released by one guy who plans to release two movies from IFD. That one and Thunder of Gigantic Serpent, the Taiwan giant snake movie. With Westerners cut into it though. But The Killer Elephants, what a title. And there's apparently a scene in it, which is the reason to see it, I guess, where a guy, a villain, gets smacked in the face by elephant balls.
An elephant teabagging.
I guess that would be a proper scholar title when describing such a scene in such a classic movie. So obviously I'm on, and I'll review it on my site, and I'll explain Well, I should explain now, because I said it earlier. I do cover IFD movies, even if they aren't Taiwanese or Hong Kong in origin. I still like to cover the IFD movies that they presented intact, which this is a case of.
I was talking to a friend, and I was saying, I explained to him about the film, because he watches tons of films. You can't play the... Have you seen this movie game with him? Because he has. So the rare that you can introduce like a mainstream American or British or whatever movie to him without him going, yeah, I've seen that. He was on a bit of an Asian tear recently, watching quite a few. And so I was explaining to him about The Kick coming out, and he was like, oh, yeah, but no English subtitles. So I said, yeah, but the directors, if you've seen any of the directors of the films, story and plot and character aren't exactly his main concerns. Mm-hmm. It's putting a lot of ass-kicking on screen. And from the trailer, it looks like there's a lot of twirly Taekwondo style ass kicking on screen. So I'm down with that.
That looks nice and efficient. You know, probably 90 minutes of physicality.
Well, I'd imagine it'd be 40 minutes of setup, and then probably an hour, hopefully.
Yeah, because it's Thai and Korean, then they probably won't go the two hour route. But who knows?
Oh yeah, I hope not. There's no way. I'd be surprised if a martial arts action film could sustain 2 hours, and I'd be even more surprised if Pratchett could sustain a martial arts film for 2 hours, because he barely can sustain one for 90 minutes.
he'll do multiple scenes of, like, clearly, like, scenes done out of panic, you know, forced dialogue scenes about pussy or something, you know, the Kevin Smith style. You know, what's he doing? You know, the special Korean cut that had to be 120 minutes. It looks fun. I haven't heard anything about it, so I don't know if it's a bus movie yet or anything like that, but certainly maybe it'll start here.
Yeah, maybe. This could be the start of it. I mean, on Twitch, it's been mentioned quite a few times.
Right.
But I haven't much else, because it hasn't got any stars in it, really. Mm-hmm. Apart from the chick from Chocolate and appearing for a little bit. I'm pretty sure it'd only be a small role.
Right.
But yeah, there's no real star power, but maybe after it hits, could have some new stars, maybe. Who knows?
And it's always cool to have... it's an interesting prospect to have co-productions, especially back in the day, but action co-productions... could be a cool merger of talents.
Yeah, well, there's I went to a show in Korea, a theatre show called Jump, which has been running for quite a long time, and that's like the whole thing of that is it's a family of Taekwondo experts. Mm-hmm. And it's just a comedy kind of martial arts show, not barely any words spoken. It's all kind of physical gags and things like that, like a silent movie. But all the people in it have got, like, are really good athletes and, you know, can do the kicks and flips and a lot of the physicality they're really good at. Because, I mean, Taekwondo is really big here. All the schools I've taught at, loads of the kids go to Taekwondo classes. It's really, really common for kids to go to Taekwondo classes here. Any little town or street you walk down, you'll probably see a Taekwondo school or a little bus that goes around to collect kids to go to the Taekwondo school.
Right.
Okay. So I think there's probably a lot of talent in terms of martial arts ability around Korea that can be used in movies. Because, I mean, obviously, like, Hong Kong became famous for a lot of action films, and Thailand has become famous for a lot of action films, martial arts, but Korea... haven't really got into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been a few good films, but Fighter in the Wind is a particular standout, and City of Violence is a good one, Arahan, but it's not a burgeoning kind of subgenre in Korean movies.
No, it seems like a select few, like 4 or 5, that can't be carrying the torch forever either, if Korea wants to focus on that, even if only sparsely.
Yeah. Well, they've got the skill to make quality movies, and they've got, like I said, I'm sure there isn't a shortage of people with the physical ability. Mm-hmm. So maybe, yeah, maybe the kit could be starting all kinds of things going.
Yeah. We'll see. Move it on. You know, do you miss being on the show, on the network? I'm very receptive to honesty, so bring it on.
Yeah, of course I do. It was always good having chats and stuff, and it was pretty well. I don't know how long, but we were at it for like every week for a good, pretty consistent time, right?
Yeah, every and we're trying to get back to that, at least putting out shows weekly. We tried different formats in terms of, you know, doing bi-weekly shows of whatever show on the network, but still kind of rightly decided that the anchor show should be a weekly thing, and every special show we'll try and put up bi-weekly at the best of our abilities, because life tends to get in the way, except for me, because I don't have none. So, I'm just sitting here, and on that topic, I put this up on Facebook, but I mentioned it here, kind of verbatim what I wrote, because Masters Do, my This Week in Sleaze co-host King Who, and you are increasingly busy in your real lives, and the time differences are also a thing, and you know I'm trying to do some casting essentially for a new co-host or two. And to, you know, because we've been so blessed to have only great talkers on as guests, and all of you I consider great friends, but what I am looking for is someone who can do a one time per week commitment to at least one regular Podcast on Fire episodes, because again it is the anchor show, and possibly, you know, if that person or persons likes being on and we get a groove going, then maybe, you know, we can let that bleed into the special shows as well. And so essentially I'm asking for volunteers, new and old, and no need to audition for us before we go real alive. I've all confidence in the world that old and new guests or guest hosts will like the format, and I think this show, the Anchor Show, is a good way to start, because it's more relaxed, and there's not always, you know, a theme to the show based on a hell of a lot of research. It's, you know, we're getting back to the way we were, if you will, when you and I and Stu picked up the mics every Wednesday and let it roll and see where it got us. Usually the structure wasn't very strict, and that's kind of where the magic happens too.
Well, to be honest as well, I think I mentioned this probably on the podcast that I was on before, the Mikecast. Catching kind of like Korean films, I thought I'd be able to come here and watch loads of Korean films, but even though the DVDs almost always have English subtitles, the movies almost never show at the cinema. Mm-hmm. With English. It's very rare. I think there's maybe two or three cinemas in Seoul which show like one Korean movie a month with English subtitles. Mm.
Certainly no demand, yeah. I mean, you don't have Westerners knocking on the doors, you know, in droves.
But, and then DVD stores are very rare. So they've got things called DVD rooms here. Basically, it's a room with, like, a sofa in it. Usually some kind of, like, plasticky or PVC kind of sofa. Easy wipe down. And a projector screen and a sound system, and then you basically go in like a DVD rental store, look through, pick your movie, give it to the person behind the counter, pay for your room, and then go into the room, and then they put the movie on, and you sit there and watch the movie.
Sounds so, that's actually, so sleazy for some reason, you know.
Oh yeah, well it is a kind of used by a lot of people as a place for couples to hang out. But that, yeah, most Koreans, I think, either the cinema or a DVD room is where they watch films, so the kind of the home DVD market is not big at all here. Mm-hmm. So it's actually quite hard getting for movies, but I don't know where I'll be next, but if it is Hong Kong, then there's a good chance I'll be out at the cinema watching new films and old films on a regular basis. So
yeah, and no, that obviously never stopped. You know, the subtitling after 1997 and all that, it kept on going, because I heard way back when that it might have been me perceiving it wrong that it might that there was a chance that English subtitles would kind of fade away.
Well, the thing is, this Korea is very homogenous, whereas Hong Kong has got like a lot more multiculturalism and a ton more English speakers there. Mm-hmm. So I think, and like I said, it's kind of a habit that they just put Chinese and English subtitles on a lot of films. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So yeah, there's a chance if I do end up there that, and my study will be finished, so I'll have more free time. That could be making more of a regular, not about every week, but definitely more regular puff appearances.
Right. Yeah, it would be very welcome, and because whenever I listen back to a show, and I listen quite frequently to the show, because I've gotten over that hang up of listening to my own voice and all of that, and I like our shows, even though that's sounds very, you know, stupid to like and self congratulatory, but you know, I always like listening back to shows where we had different guests on, and you know, and feeling that we did a sufficient job covering, you know, Godzilla movies and all of that. I think it's just fun, and it's fun movies to listen to. I mean, if I find it fun, then, you know, God, there must be a few people that does as well, do as well.
Yeah, of course.
So, on the topic of future co-hosts, you know, research work is welcome, but currently I got that aspect covered at the moment, and I don't mind it, even though I'm not saying I do good research, but I do it. And by free will. but once you get comfortable and we get in sync and all that, we can start dividing up duties, and again, I got some lined up that they're willing to pop their puff cherry. And I really had no reason to worry that, you know, I thought at least two or three would like to come on and feel comfortable about coming on. Some seems to like be like, how do you say, you know, it's in our nature to kind of, you know, dismiss ourselves. You know, well, I would like to be on, but only consider me as a last resort kind of thing, you know. Those people I want on first. You know, drag them out. You're coming with me now. So, Phil Mills, we might be coming after you.
Good. The Puff Squad will be knocking on his door.
Yeah. Coming to get you. But that'll be good. Moving on to network updates, we won't do a massive thing, because doing it weekly, you now get a frequent dosage of what's coming up on the network and what has been done. But kind of to get Mike up to speed, in case you don't know fully what we're planning, I wanted to focus on, or rather, I should ask this, have you followed at all like the expansion and development of the Podcast on Fire network?
I've kept my eye on it. Uh-huh. I know there's a whole family of stuff going on.
Yeah. And is the This Week in Sleaze show, do you approve or disapprove of that?
I approve wholeheartedly, of course, Kenneth.
Well, once upon a time you said you look forward to My Cat Free show, and at that time we were like only planning a few episodes, but after you like start writing about it, trying to come up with basic research, I realize there's too much to cover. And why not make it a own show? Because I credit you and Stu with the creation of the network, because I think it was your chat after a show once upon a time about, you know, watching Japanese movies and talk about Japanese movies we haven't watched. That kind of started the first offshoot. Obviously the commentary that we did what was a sign of that, but I think, you know, Japan on Fire, Joff, was kind of, you know, your chat about it, you and Stu's chat about it, kind of started it all, and it's kind of, you know, snowballed from there in a logical direction, I think, including, you know, the Cat Free direction. It needed its own show, because you can cover so much, and we've even done our first track back to, you know, early Sleaze. Watching The Night of Nights, the Shaw Brothers Swordplay movie with, at the time, scandalous nudity that's not in the film anymore. So it sounds like a dumb show to do, but man, I think we did really well on that. We did 3 hours. Yeah, exactly. And, but we obviously we have different segments of the show, including, you know, last Sleazy Movies Watched, which is usually the last hour. Then me and King just go off on any random Charlie Cho movie that there is and all of that. So it's good fun. But yeah, the shows that we plan to get out there, to expand the network with, are the likes of IFD on Fire, which was initially just planned as four like specials with me and Mike Leader doing the IFD history, talking of Godfrey Ho, Richard Harrison, clearing out some rumors, misinformation, talking about the different eras that IFD had, the ninja era, the kickboxing era, because they tried out different ways of cut and splicing. But I realized, why keep it under the banner? Why not expand it into its own show? Because there's so much to talk about. So after the four shows, I'll do, you know, with a host or not, maybe there will be solo shows, you know, kind of the best of IFD, whether it's complete movies like The Killer Elephants or you know, the best of the cut and splice, cut and paste technique. You know, there are a lot of fun movies out there, like Diamond Ninja Force or Majestic Thunderbolt, with various degrees of Richard Harrison participation. And with that, I mean, in most movies, Richard looks very stoned, very bored, very embarrassed, and very sleepy all at the same time. And in some movies, it looks like he's having fun. When he plays bad guys in Majestic Thunderbolts, anti-heroes. So IFD on Fire will kind of... I wanted to take that direction because that's what I've been doing on my site. Exactly that. So it's kind of... I've prepared the structure and the work already by writing about it. But it'll be fun. Mike Leaders, you might have heard... Mike Banner, that he worked at IFD as a player, as an actor at one time, but probably in the later stages. He's not in, as far as I know, in these ninja movies because they had moved on by then. But I've not spotted Mike yet, and he's not told me yet which movies or movie he was in at IFD. But Mike knows his stuff. He loves, you know, the entertainment level that these really poor movies give back to you, and one episode, a commentary, will have a Thai connection. You remember we talked about Kickboxer King, that it used an old Thai movie as its source, and then edited in a kickboxing plot with Westerners on top of that. I thought it was Born to Fight. I was wrong. It has an English title that came into play just a few years ago. They released a movie on like a triple bill DVD in America called Thai Police Story.
Yeah, I remember.
And it's apparently only 1 hour long. So, and that's good because most of it is therefore in Kickboxer King, and it's like, obviously it's a Panarity crime movie. And man, Mike, did they have a death wish, these stuntmen, as well? Because they are hurting themselves. They are absolutely hurting themselves.
And that's what you do when, you know, you don't have a union.
Yeah, and they're doing it well too. They're hurting themselves well. But what I'm saying is, Pana clearly, you know, is channeling Hong Kong, but not in a lazy kind of way where he's just copying. I think even in a low budget movie like Thai Police Story, you see some chops in terms of editing and angles and film speeds, and I rather admire them. And I thought, you know, I haven't seen him, you know, do subsequent acting, but I thought he had the looks to kind of be an acceptable action hero in a major role. And probably still do to an extent. I haven't seen any recent pics of him or if he's acting at all, but I think he has the chops, actually, but maybe prefers to be behind the camera solely nowadays.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love
him. He's actually in Angel 3, which I realized just recently. It's set in Thailand. He has a kickboxing fight with Alex Fong, Alex Jetpack Fong, in Angel 3. Jetpack comes from the finale of Angel 3, where they assault, you know, the bad guys on jetpacks, and it's great.
I think you've only seen Angels, right? The first movie.
Yeah, Iron Angels, Midnight Angels, or some AKs over there.
Didn't really like it.
First one is good. Angel 2 is absolutely shit for 1 hour because it is a travelogue, essentially. but the last half hour is classic Stanley Tong directed stuff, you know. And they are hurting themselves there as well. Angel 3 is just cheesy fun with some of the best Moon Lee fight sequences. That kickboxing fight with Panna and Alex Fong is genuinely good. Alex wasn't a trained martial artist, but they did all right. And it also has the jetpack ending, which is as cheesy as it sounds, and also as really well executed. It's those movies were bigger Hong Kong action movies, albeit they were set all over the place and probably co-productions to some degree. But I do recommend Angel, the whole Angel series. But be prepared, especially the second, to basically skip the first hour. You're not missing anything. Absolutely, it's so embarrassing to. It seems to be paid by the Malaysian tourism board. It's that transparent. But the last half hour, you know, those people went home, and Stanley Tong and crew put, you know, the cast into a figure role, and it's great. Half hour like, relentless jungle action.
Is it like Jackie Chan product placement?
Maybe from the views of the Malaysian people, yeah. I mean, I think there's a scene where they essentially are showing like how they extract whatever they do from a certain seed and what and how they make a product out of that. I don't remember offhand now, but it's so transparent. You know, it could have been, you know, a big old infomercial that happened to have sort of in the background foreground Moon Lee and Alex Fong. Strange. But it's great. And the first one has that fantastic, albeit very short, brutal fight with Yukari and Moon Lee.
Yeah, a little bit of Moon Lee and Yukari, actually.
Yeah.
Very awesome.
Yeah, Yukari's vicious in that first movie. Shame she didn't do more bad guy roles or bad women roles, villain roles.
She was badass.
Yeah. Wang Jiangli in that as well, so always comes off good. So it's good fun. And next of the four shows that I'm going to mention now that we're planning to do, obviously, you know, just like the Cat Free show, obviously, Stu should have what show? I mean, you should probably guess, Mike, what show is the one Stu should head?
Would it be On Fire?
Yeah, it'll probably be akin to that, but the major theme is, of course, Ikin Cheng, the Ikin Hour.
See now, I was about to say Studio Ghibli on Fire.
Well, we're doing that already. We're doing a Studio Ghibli season on Joff, actually.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's in progress already. So good guess, but we beat you to it. Yeah. You might have been the mastermind of Joff, but we're running laps around you now.
could you actually sustain an Ekin Hour?
Well, no problem to do an hour. I can do several hours on anything. But the problem is, can we sustain, you know, can we sustain 50 plus movies?
There's only one way to find out.
Yeah. So we're doing like Girls Without Tomorrow and Boys Are Easy amongst the first shows. And they, you know, not bad movies at all. And I have seen quite a few. I haven't seen all. So it'll be fun. And as Stu and I spoke of, and it's a segment that you'll be able to hear, actually, is we'll try and do the cameo Ikin Hour as well. Discuss the movies where you had a cameo in. So, elaborate. but it'll be fun. It will be relaxed and sort of valid as well. It'll be movie reviews. You know, proper movie reviews, but we won't take it super, super, super seriously with, you know, extensive research and interviews with the director and all of that. It'll be easy and fun because you know, fandom is fun, and Stu he's come into his own multiple times on multiple shows, but I think that this will be a show where he'll like the Studio Ghibli season. I think this is a show for him.
He's already done all the research.
Yeah. Multiple articles on Ekin Cheng movies and all that, Storm Riders, Storm Warriors articles and Young and Dangerous articles, so, you know, he's running laps around us, definitely, in terms of Ekin Cheng. And finally, I've got two that are sort of preliminary in terms of titles, because I want to come up with better titles, but one is Taiwan Black Movies, and it'll be an offshoot from IFD on Fire, kind of, because via IFD, I found some really cool Taiwanese movies from a really cool Taiwanese era, late 70s, early 80s, where they made, you know, socially conscious movies, gritty crime dramas, rape revenge movies, fantasy movies, and it was their new wave. And IFD presented a lot of those intact as well, and also cut them up and made into Richard Harrison movies, but you can identify the movie underneath as Taiwanese. And I want to do a show on that era. And the reason I'm saying Taiwan Black movies, and that I'm unsure, why I'm unsure of the name, is that there is a documentary on this very subject called Taiwan Black Movies, and it's too good of a name, you know. I wanted that name. But Taiwan Black Movies on Fire sounds a bit lazy as well, so I'm not too sure what I'm going to call that. But we're doing it. Me and King probably will get together on a few episodes of that, because we both are into that era of Taiwanese filmmaking, which might include the odd, you know, Lee Chun-nam movie, even, you know, martial arts oriented. But
look, a bit of Lee Chun-nam.
Yeah, mad director, mad as hell. And I love him for it. He Challenge of the Lady Ninja is a great movie, and Killing Him a Nude, obviously a great movie. Yeah, there's a movie called that.
That's a title.
What's that about? But and the final one that I haven't named properly yet either, but the director series, and it, that's more serious, because I want to highlight some Hong Kong directors, for instance, that doesn't get enough love. People know of certain movies of directors, but don't know the directors behind them, and that they made way more cooler movies than the one that all people talk about. Case in point, Story of Ricky. Good movie in its own right. I like it. That director has made 3 or 4 really way more insane movies, in my opinion. Not more gory movies than Story of Ricky, but way more insane and energetic movies, like The Cat, Seventh Curse, that Stu did a commentary on with his friends. And Her Vengeance is this great, gritty rape revenge movie. And Men from the Gutter is one of his Shaw Brothers actioners that is super impressive. So that's an example of how I like to, you know, highlight neglected directors, not because the audience and the people are, you know, stupid and they are neglecting them consciously, but because they're, you know, people don't tend to think a lot about who's the director, especially if he or she only has a Chinese name on credits, and that Chinese name is slightly tweaked from credits to credits. You don't sort of connect the dots, you know what I mean?
Not all of those films would have Western DVD releases either, right?
In the case of him, a lot of them actually do, but yeah, that's an example too. If picking another director, we have to, you know, redo it based on availability as well, because we might not be able to get all the movies. But you know, Nam Nai Choi is the name of the director of Story of Ricky, and I think that'll be fun. That sort of, you know, my heart beats for, you know, underrated Hong Kong directors and movies and all of that. So. And Taiwanese. So maybe we'll also do some neglected Lee Chun-nam movies, because there's a versatile director, in my opinion.
Yeah, a whole bunch of films in his filmography.
So it'll be fun. The network is about to expand with possibly 4 new shows. And with bringing you back slowly but surely based on availability, and a new co-host or 2 or 3, who knows. Maybe the ideas will really start flowing, you know, and I'll be here and try and organize it all, if help or not, you know, based on availability. I do have a lot of time, so, which is not depressing, as depressing as it sounds, by the way. So,
and you're just dedicated to your movies, Ken?
I am.
Or to podcasting?
I mean, I do plan. I have book plans too, and you know, both a review book, kind of like John Charles did with his review book, kind of like mini reviews, capsule reviews, but also, you know, once I get a lot of stuff recorded about IFD and the likes, I want to try and compile as much as I can of that into a book. So it I have plans. I'm gonna try and do stuff, and I feel more motivated than ever, and the podcast is a great tool for that, and I have you guys to thank for a lot of things, you know. So that it's despite it being, you know, a weekly you know, banter show where we banter about a little bit of everything. It all seemed to have a purpose. To set people on paths, you know, including me.
Good outlet for your passion.
Mm-hmm. We haven't done this for a while, so Mike, last movie or movies watched. You have the floor. Do what you like. Talk about how many movies you like.
Well, I'm going to go with one. Keeping it simple, kicking it old school.
Right on.
I watched, the most recent film I watched was The Rescue.
Okay.
It's a Shaw Brothers film from 1971. And it stars Laura Lee and Shisu.
Oh yeah, the female, the lady. Yeah.
Well, everybody knows Laura Lee, because he's awesome. And he was in just a whole bunch of classic movies. Shisu was kind of like, basically like the new Chang Pei Pei.
Yeah, I can see that.
Kind of a good actress, good looking, but also could throw down.
She's if I'm not mistaken, Mike, Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires.
I haven't seen that film, so I'm not sure.
I think she's in that. She's the sister amongst the brothers, because there's a whole band of brothers. One of the AKAs for Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires is actually something, something, something and sister. Very little, but anyway, pardon me.
The plot's not that amazing. It's very, very basic. It's only 80 minutes long, or a little bit under 80 minutes, the film, which I like. Nice and kind of lean and just straight into it. Basically, the Mongols are in control, and the Hans are all suppressed. And there's a Lord Wen, has been kidnapped by the Mongols, and they're trying to get him to work for them, or join their side, which he refuses to do. And a band of Han rebels want to rescue him. That's basically it. That's pretty much the whole plot. So the Tartars, as they're referred to, like their sources, but not digging their regime. Basically, they're just suppressing the Hans, and although actually they're not thinking about it, they're not the kind of most evil. It's like in a few films in Shaw Brothers in the early 70s, late 60s, a little bit bad for having the Mongols in there, mm-hmm. as the baddies in a few films. And then after that, in the 70s, later 70s, it was just almost always the Qings. Occasionally the British would show up to sell opium and go, oh, what? The Chinese fellow, I'll beat you in my boxing. then get his ass kicked. But yeah, the Mongols are the bad guys in this one. All furry hats and wispy moustaches.
I think they're the subject of the heroic ones as well. I think all the David Chang and company were Mongols, based on the fact that I remember them having furry hats.
Yeah, they're Mongols in that. Well, actually, funny you mentioned David Chang. Laura Leet's kind of the main guy in it, playing a goodie.
Wow.
But playing that kind of kung fu master who kind of lays around the countryside, just wants to drink and meet girls, kind of playboy, playful kind of attitude. Uh-huh. And that's exactly the role that David Chang will probably be playing in the future. Well, he could have been playing it then as well. Although he's a little bit more serious to start with, mm-hmm. sort of the Chang Chae films. But yeah, it made me think of David Chang. It would be like right in his wheelhouse. So Laura Lee is playing the kind of the main hero in this, which is a role that's fairly rare for him. Early on in his career, he played it a few times, but I think, I'm guessing it just didn't stick with audiences, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to say he was ugly, but he doesn't exactly have kind of like the matinee idol looks which you'd normally associate with a hero in a film.
At best in the early 60s, mid 60s, but it quickly turned into a more of a heavy, if you will.
Yeah, so like gets the character actor kind of look to him. Mm-hmm. But he's great. I don't think, I think only Kufeng in Shaw Brothers could match him for acting ability.
There's a reason he's so loved, you know, and yep. Those are only one of the few reasons.
Yeah, and so he's great in this. Well, but the main reason for the film, to be honest, I think there's. I mean, it's a fun kind of action romp thing. It would be a little bit like a Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon kind of Robin Hood movie kind of feel to it, with Errol Flynn jumping around in tights and that. Mm-hmm. If there wasn't quite so much axes to the head themed action. And there's actually boobies at one point, but very briefly.
Right on. King, we've got another movie to do for this week in Sleaze. Our Shaw Boobies Hour.
Well, it's the genius plan of, like, right, we need to get into this jail, so let's get arrested. They're like, brilliant. What can we do to get arrested? And so they sit there thinking for a second, and one person goes, how about we harass the Mongol woman? So that's a solid plan. So cut to some dude ripping Mongol girl's dress, so you can see a bare bum and boobies. So, brief sleaze. So it's a fun kind of movie, but I think there's three things that kind of stand out as being pretty good. One, Loli, she's awesome. Two, Shisu. So I think she's great. She doesn't have the ability to convince her crying at all. Mm-hmm. I think I could cry more effectively on camera. The Joey method, just pull some hairs or something. But other than that, I think she's great. She's got kind of like, she can be cutesy and kind of girly and with the romantic kind of stuff, but also she's got like a mean streak, a kind of toughness to her. Mm-hmm. She's spunky. So she's great as well. I'm a big fan of hers. She was in, like, Lady Hermit as well, with Chang Pei-Pei and Lady of the North and a bunch of other films.
And to confirm, she actually was in Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. That wasn't... my mind wasn't playing tricks on me. I would have discovered it latest this weekend, because it's actually one of my Halloween screenings this weekend, because I love the movie. I love Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. There's a fun mashup between, you know, having Peter Cushing and David Chang act against each other is just brilliant, in my opinion, and they're both really, really good.
Yeah, so, Loli, Shisu, and Tung Guy is the action choreographer. Tung Guy was the partner with Lang Ba Lung for many years, doing the action Shaw Brothers, the early movies, mm-hmm. before Lang Ba Lung became a director himself. Tung Guy directed a few films. Most notably for me is Opium and the Kung Fu Master. Mm-hmm. So that's in my top 10 all-time favourite Kung Fu movies. And he's known for weapon stuff, so this being an early 70s and virtually all weapon-based, it's perfect for him. So the choreo is really nice in it. Nothing too fancy, but smooth, and Loli wasn't known as the greatest martial artist and stuff, but he can hold his own in an action sequence.
That's a reason you remember him from the likes of the Chinese Boxer, because he's such a big presence, and obviously the Chinese Boxer is the more of a basher kind of movie, but rather than flow and smooth kung fu, but yeah, he made it up in, you know, if he was lacking in that area, he made it up with presence, and I guess pure awesomeness is the scholar way to sum it up as well.
Well, he was good enough for Lau Ga Lung to appear in plenty of his films, so mm-hmm. good enough for me.
Oh yeah.
I just wanted another mention actually. Chan Sheng is in it, who, I don't know if you recognise, you know the guy from the name?
Not too sure, so...
Guarantee, if you see his picture, or some pictures on HK City Magic or wherever, you'll recognise him instantly, because he was Mr. Shaw Brothers. I think from around 1971 till like the end of the shows, 1984-ish. He pretty much exclusively was in Shaw Brothers movies, and he averaged around about 12 movies a year.
Wow.
In Shaw Brothers. I mean, he's got the look of a baddie. So he's not exactly like Mr. Main Character, leading man. But still, 12 movies a year is pretty impressive. For 12 movies a year for about 13 years, it's pretty good going. And he's definitely got that kind of bad guy look to him.
I think I know what you're talking about. Just pasted you a link in the window here. The one I'm thinking of, which is Mr. Shaw Brothers and a constantly bad guy, Chan Chen, is pure awesomeness for me as well. If I'm thinking of the right guy, you're thinking of as well. So
yeah, that's our boy.
Yeah.
So that's pretty. I mean, that's steady work. That is. That's workmanlike. But he's got a good presence. So, and I'm guessing that mentee was, well, either cheap. Or, reliable for the studio and for the directors he used, always there and ready to do whatever.
Yeah, seemingly no shame either. He's in TF Mouse, Lost Souls, a very harsh immigrant drama for Shaw Brothers. And, he had no problem being a deviant and then some. And apparently died very young. He's 44 years old, according to... Hong Kong movie database. He died in 1984, born in 1940.
Yeah, well, I wonder why he died off, because that means he would have been working, from what I can tell, right up to his death as well.
Yeah, there's credits in for 1985 as well, which probably meant some movies were done and released in before his death, obviously, and released in 85.
That's basically it, really. I mean, the plot's not very detailed. It's simple, straightforward. There's a bit of double crossing going on, but it's not hard to spot. Gets pretty bloody at the end, as you might expect. Lots of, like I said, axes into the head, the neck, and chest. Shisu goes for it as well at the end. She's great in the fight sequences. Oh yeah, Bolo's in it as well. Bolo Young, professional massive bastard. Bolo Young, who just looks huge all the time. And it did get me thinking at the end, actually. It was one of those, being a kung fu film, especially a Shaw Brothers film, it would seem, there's, virtually everyone's got to die at the end. Mm-hmm. And it got to that point. It happens a few times, actually, when I'm watching a movie, where it's like, I can see where this is going, but I kind of don't want it to. It's like, just once can they just, like, ride off into the sunset, just like happily, like yay, we won, let's go home. But no, that didn't happen. but it got me thinking. It's like, how depressed must moviegoers have been when they went to watch a Shaw Brothers film? Just walking out every time, going, because it's not even like you get a post-credit sequence or you get music playing. It's just like they're all dead. The end.
Another Shaw Brothers production.
Yeah, lights go up. That's it. It's like shock of like, well, that's yeah, I'm ready to go out and party now.
Yeah, I wonder if that even struck them or if they were so used to it that it was akin to fun at the movies. Because they kind of knew what to expect though.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing. Well, the thing is, obviously I'm used to it. I think the idea is that you'd walk out of the cinema going, he sacrificed himself for his country, or he sacrificed himself or herself for like the person they love, or etc. etc. You go out feeling, I feel some pride now. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Straightforward, up and down. 80 minutes, like I said, just under 80 minutes long. Plenty of blood. I enjoyed it. It was a good movie.
Good. And we actually will be hitting on a Shaw Brothers theme with my last movies watched and the listener question, which was provided by me, because I recently watched The Devil's Mirror. Seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
Sun Chung's first movie for Shaw Brothers, the legendary Sun Chung, Human Lantern, and The Avenging Eagle, director, amongst other things. I'm sure that's those are the two movies I know. Human Lantis is the only one I've seen out of those two movies. The Avenging Eagle I'll obviously want to see, but I'm not yet.
And Rendezvous with Death as a whole bunch of. I think you can make a strong argument for Sun Chung being the best director at the Shaw Brothers.
Shows early, because this movie rocks. To me, Devil's Mare, it rocks. A gem that was finally unearthed when it got that deserved DVD release in 2006 amidst, you know, the massive output from Celestial. And in short, the Jiu Xuan Witch, played by an actress called Li Gaisai, know nothing of. She's cool though. She's waging war on the clans of the martial arts world and is searing in on the pair of mirrors needed for her plan to achieve invisibility. And clans is therefore in need to stand together and find out who's the traitor among them, because their traitor is sleeping with the witch, which is the sign of a traitor, I guess. And it's from 1972, by the way, and it's simplicity itself, but really shot with an eye for eye-popping design. And yeah, the Shaw Brothers sets were eye-popping and all of that, but to be honest, I don't know how you feel, Mike. The Shaw sets could get stale at times. The Shaw feel could get stale at times.
Not for me, I love it.
Right. Well, I thought this was quite colourful, though, it stood out to me.
Yeah, I guess. It's a bit like your home or something. Mm-hmm. It's my movie home, so when I turn it on, it's like comforting, like, yeah. It's the rug. It's the famous rug. Mm-hmm. That's in, like, I say famous. It's famous if you're a proper nerd. But it's in, like, so many Shaw Brothers films. The same piece of set, furniture and stuff like that. Yeah. You just notice things like, I'm in familiar territory. I feel comforted.
I do agree on that. And I have no really good example where I thought literally the Shaw sets were stale. But so, having said that, I guess I only think that when the movies aren't always as great, you know, you're not as transfixed by the sets and all of that, because I love having any scene on the famous bridge, you know, and the famous staircase that the high or long staircase that's in like Executioners from Shaolin and many, many movies, and the big gate leading into whatever lair is in a particular movie, you know. But I did like this because it has it was eye-popping and colourful, and the movie, you know, knows it needs to thrust forward when you're not saying much, when you're not being an important movie, so just, you know, go for it. And it's, you know, it's a delightful mix of the supernatural, and stopping there, I gotta mention one scene that I think many people will remember from the movie. The witch has actually kidnapped clan members to do her to do work for her, and she's given them the corpse worms pills that causes extreme skin deterioration. Do you remember that?
To be honest, I watched this a long time ago. I don't really remember it too much.
Right. Well, the makeup effect is great, but when they actually try out the effect of skin deterioration, they obviously do jump cuts, you know, put on a little bit of makeup or take off a little bit of makeup. But the problem is they don't keep the actors in the same place. So they actually jump about, essentially. and not, you know, a centimeter to the, you know, they literally, like, seems to take a step to the left and to the right.
So continuity.
Absolutely. It looks great, though. I like stuff in its infancy, and it comes from the heart, obviously. And the concept of, you know, skin deterioration, you know, that corpse worm pill that she gives them, and they want the antidote, but at one point they only get half the antidote, obviously, then half the makeup vanishes, which is great. But so that supernatural element is great, and the mix in of numerous violent action scenes is, you know, terrific. And the action has both scenes, you know, high on characters and low on characters, but regardless of scenario, these action directors that I don't know much of, they're credited as Choi Chung-hok and Simon Choi. They're actually different people, though. I did check if Hong Kong Movie Database actually listed the same person, only with an English name before the last name, but they're actually different people. They provide, you know, in my view, premium elite action that ranks above most that came out of the early 70s, actually. And the pace is furious, and it's not undercranked as well, which is great to see. And the sound design is loud. And stopping there, I've seen some Shaw Brothers movies from this early era, and a friend of mine pointed out that for sensor reasons or something like that, they didn't provide as loud fight sounds as the 70s went on. So if you look at some bashes from this time, you know, that it's loud and it's kind of, you know, disturbingly loud, but in a good way, you know, you feel it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Chinese Boxer probably is a good example of that. And I actually, you know, it adds to the effect, and of course the Shaw Brothers' blood is spilled generously, and even to splatter-like levels at times. You know, for once they, you know, do some actual, not just, you know, the minor blood pack that the stuntman has in his abdomen area and squeezes that. You know, they have some, you know, they fill up large balloons of Shaw Brothers' blood at some points and go kablooey. You know. It's not, you know, advanced makeup effects or anything, but it's great. You know, it's so entertaining. And I was so impressed with Sun Chung's efforts as, you know, a first-time director. This is great stuff. And it apparently that trajectory was continually upwards, even though I'm sure he's done his share of shit. But, you know, 10 years later with Human Lanterns or what have you, you know, the standard was still high.
And, to be fair. He's got, if you look at his filmography, he's got a very tight filmography.
Really?
Well, the films I've seen, and then there's films that I know about that are like fan favourites or have got a lot of fans. I mean, Devil's Mirror, I remember when that came out on the IBL DVD, the remaster. Mm-hmm. That was one that not a lot of people knew much about. Mm-hmm. And so it surprised a lot of people. And there was a bit of a buzz going around about, you know, a bit of a hidden gem. So yeah, there's Devil's Mirror, and then The Bloody Escape with Chen Quan Tai, which is a good movie. Big Bad Sis, which is one of my favourite 70s kind of exploitation-y bashers.
Yeah.
Which is great. Lady Exterminator, which hasn't been out, I don't think, yet, but people love that. Judgment of an Assassin with David Chiang, which is, that's another one that's a bit of a kind of cult favourite. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like it that much, but I know a lot of people who think that's a bit underrated. Avenging Eagle, which is like one of the all-time classics. To Kill a Mastermind, which is one of the ones that just got kind of released on the Z-Eagle, and that's the only place to come out, and it was kind of a super sought-after movie for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I hear a lot of people, even though that kind of lived up to the hype for some people, it's a classic. The Kung Fu Instructor with...
Dick Long, is it?
I'm out of practice. I'm not used to talking about Shaw Brothers or Kung Fu movies or anything with people.
Oh.
It's a conversation that only goes on in my head most of the time.
And in your head, you fail at the conversation.
it's Di Lung,
yeah.
In The Kung Fu Instructor, and that's a really good film. The Deadly Breaking Sword with Di Lung and... Shit, help me out, Ken.
I haven't seen that, so you're on your own. But some great English titles, you know, your striking English titles, not just cheap exploitation-like titles, you know, Shaolin, whatever, you know, To Kill a Mastermind, you know.
That's a great title.
Avenging Eagle, Big Bad Sis, that's shit I like, you know. The Cheeky Little Angels.
Yeah.
The Sugar Daddies.
Rendezvous with Death, which is also a classic, and then Revenge of the Corpse, which I know a lot of people love. Yeah, Human Lanterns, another classic.
Yeah.
And even like one of his indie films, Fistful of Talents.
Right.
Which I believe is a Billy Chong film.
That's right.
That's a cracker as well. So I think he's just got like really good films consistently throughout the kind of mid to late 70s.
Yeah, and even after Shaw Brothers, I mean, the very last movies he did, one of the last movies he did was City War with Chiang Fat and Dick Long. Very violent, edgy, dark movie. Lady in Black, same thing could be said for that with Bridget Lin and Tony Lung-Gafai and the great Sekin as well. So there's some great post shows stuff. I think he was on top of his game pretty consistently, it seems. And to me, and this might be naive, it seemed like he worked best with edgy, violent material, kind of.
Yeah, well, his films have definitely got kind of a dark tone to them. I mean, Chang Chae's films were always, you know, a lot of blood and guts and fighting and everything, but mm-hmm. kind of campy with it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain camp, obviously, to all the stuff that happens in Shaw Brothers, but there's definitely a darker tone. I think you're right there, like Human Lanterns and Avenging Eagle. There's a kind of a somberness and a bit of a kind of a melancholic kind of feel to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I yeah. quite like. I like. Makes a change from kind of the kung fu comedy that was kind of the in thing when Jackie Chan, especially when Jackie Chan kind of burst onto the scene in the late 70s. And that became like, you know, you've got to have some jokes in there.
Mm-hmm.
But he still kept going with a bit of bleak action.
And there's a reason the claim is continuous for Sun Chung's films. Even to this day, it's obviously a period movie doesn't age as such, but it could have, you know, if they were formula movies, real formula movies, like, you know, echoing a kung fu comedy, I don't think we would have talked about them as much, because I never saw many Shaw Bros directors, if any at all, echo that template very well. I think Lau Garland made some good transition to martial arts comedy. I mean, I saw Clan of the White Lotus recently again. In my opinion, brilliant film, where they are allowed to be funny and sort of thoughtful in terms of the comedy. You know, it's not just, you know, have the goofy buck teeth characters come in and do some stuff and then fight, you know.
Yeah, there was more character in Lau Garland films when it came to comedy and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But, I mean, Sun Chung is like, amongst fans, obviously, he's you know, well-loved and stuff, but definitely kind of, it doesn't really come into consideration. Like, Chang Chae and Lau Garland are the kind of directors that people always talk about with the Shaws, and people very rarely talk about Sun Chung. Mm-hmm. They might talk about his movies, but they rarely talk about him as being one of the best directors, but I think you could argue that he was the best in the Shaw Brothers.
A good candidate for the director series that we're planning.
I reckon so. Have you seen Big Bad Sis?
No, I haven't actually. I do know it was one of the first that came out on DVD by IVL.
Thoroughly recommend that to you.
Did you do sequel to that one, whatever that was called?
I don't know, actually.
All right. But regardless, I think Chen Kuan-tai did another movie in the same playing the same character. But it's one of those movies I never picked up.
Big Brother Cheng or something like that.
Yeah, that's
played the same character.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an absolute cracker. Really good action. Nice kind of tight story. Plenty of kind of sleazy caniness in there. Yeah. Nudity, violence, gratuitous sex scenes.
Right on.
But it's a really good movie.
Big Brother Cheng was actually done by one of my favorite Shaw Brothers directors, Kwai Chi-hung. Did more exploitation, he's known more for exploitation movies, Bamba House of Dolls, The Killer Snakes, but has done some genre efforts that you've reviewed on the show. I think, Killer Constable was one of Kwai Chi-hung's films.
Oh, yeah, talking about bleak. That's possibly one of the darkest and bleakest Shaw Brothers films ever made, I think, Killer Constable.
It makes sense for that director, Kwai Chi-hung. He was great at exploitation and darkness. I mean, Killer Snakes is great because it's a vicious movie. It has animal cruelty, so beware. But man, is it visually appealing. And a remake of Willard, only with snakes. Willard was actually remade as well with Crispin Glover 10 years ago or so. But the Kwai Chi-hung I really, really dig. So Shaw Brothers has some directors that need to be highlighted more, even if their movies are highlighted a lot. Because I think there's something to be said for the filmmakers need to be seen more, be heard of more.
Yeah,
because there was filmmaking going on here, not just, you know, action directors directing 90% of the movies and then Wong Jing directing 10% of the comedy. There were filmmakers here.
You had to spoil things by mentioning Wong Jing.
Oh, you worked at Shaw Brothers, but not as much classics as you, despite. But moving on to a listener question, which is Shaw Brothers related. Last time you were on, we drooled at the prospect of having a mix of 600 plus Shaw Brothers movies in a box, but not a box set, but a box you could hook up to your computer or TV, and voila, instant access. It was called a Sea Eagle. Well, it's been a few months. I've seen a few of the movies that I wanted out of that box. I had means of getting those movies, like The Revenge of the Corpse, To Kill a Mastermind, and while good movies, the actual quality of the movies in the box are absolute shit.
Really?
It's not HD, Mike. It's not even DVD quality. They cram so much stuff into probably limited space that it actually looks like, you know, a DVD converted to, you know, a Windows Media Player format or DIVX, how you pronounce that, DIVX. You know, it's downgraded from DVD quality and it's not HD at all, which is a shame for the movies that you have on DVD that are, you know, 10 times better quality. Not too bad for the movies that were never on DVD or VCD, but I think even the VCDs look a tad bit better. And so, if you're still planning to buy that, see, don't.
Well, I wasn't, to be honest, because if you buy it and take it out of Singapore, it voids the warranty.
All right. And my thing is, if
all the movies contained on a hard drive, and knowing how often my computers that I've owned or other people's have fucked up, I would not be confident of spending, like, what is it, like $1,000 or something?
The prospect sounded, you know, nice and probably worth that price, but they it's a lazy ass product, Mike. I'm sorry to say that. I wanted to like this. I was almost buying it at one point, but
that's okay. If I end up in Hong Kong, Celestial Classic Movie Channel, bosh, straight on there.
Don't, you know what? That channel, great that they show the Shaw Brothers movies, but I've heard they showed like remastered indie classics as well. That had nothing to do with Shaw Brothers. I saw Queen Boxer a few months ago. Who was in that? Regardless, who was in that? You know, it's an indie basher. It's okay. And it's remastered and was shown on TV. You know, it would be a reason for me to watch TV again, which I never do nowadays.
I got a couple of bootlegs from people of indie movies that were shown on Celestial. Classic movies, remastered and stuff. But also, slight tangent, there's a Golden Harvest channel as well. It's like Golden Harvest 1, which will show like the modern films, and the Golden Harvest 2, which will be showing like Sammo, Jackie, Bruce Lee, all the 80s, 90s, 70s, 80s and 90s movies. So I think, yeah, in Hong Kong, Celestial Classic and the Golden Harvest Classic channel, bish bash bosh. Super cheap as well.
Wow, really? Yeah, I mean, some of those movies are readily available, but have them, you know, on a loop on TV. You know, you turn on TV late at night, oh, the last half hour away of the Dragon. How nice.
Well, yeah, it's kind of that, and like you said, they're available on DVD, but then there's the just seeing if, you know, oh, I wonder what's on. Oh, I don't know what this movie is. You know, catch something you would never have thought about buying or renting. Mm-hmm. That kind of little surprise is something that I think could be worth it.
Yeah, so and on TV, you kind of, you know, if it's super cheap and the quality isn't DVD quality necessarily, then, you know, you don't feel as cheated. But the only thing that I might be wrong about, maybe there's the occasional movie in the Sea Eagle box that is actually better quality, but from what I've seen, you know, I've seen like Revenge of the Corpse, To Kill a Mastermind, which I liked, by the way. I thought that was a good movie. And I have it in case you don't have To Kill a Mastermind or access to it. I do have it. And there's some Quai Chi Hung films in there as well that were never released. So I've gotten what I wanted, some I still want. There's a Quai Chi Hung movie called Killer Angels on Wheels that was only released on like VOD in France. But bootleggers have actually taken, you know, the VOD stream and put subtitles on it. So it's available for like 10, 15 bucks, and I will gladly pay 10, 15 bucks for that effort. But not whatever amount of bucks they wanted for the Sea Eagle. It's a shit product, and I hate the fact that they advertise it as HD. Yeah, proudly so, you know.
That's a bit of a rip. It's not genuine HD. Hey, Ken, check this. Celestial Classic Movies, right this minute, in Hong Kong, or wherever you can get it on satellite, is currently showing Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Court.
There you go.
And then following it up with The Kung Fu Instructor. And that looks like, later on in the day, they're showing The Bastard.
Oh, yeah.
But for some reason, retitled as The Reincarnated Swordsman.
Strange.
Because it's maybe they don't want to write. Maybe they don't want to write Bastard. But it looks like The Bastard from the picture.
Yeah.
It's like Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan, Kung Fu Instructor, Let's Have a Baby, A Thunderbolt Fist, My Son, To Kill a Jaguar, Inside the Forbidden City, Sweet is Revenge, Maybe It's Love, Rolls Rolls I Love You, yeah. Cohabitation, and then The Reincarnated Swordsman. It's like their day of programming up to about 7:30 p.m.
And it's only a Thursday or Friday evening, you know, or midweek programming, you know.
Yeah. Well, like you, I don't really watch TV, but I think I would probably just, if I was in, just put the TV on and just leave it playing.
Hell yes.
And just drop it in out.
Yeah, and hopefully it's available to you if you do decide to go to Hong Kong. It's actually available to you in that particular housing block or apartment block.
Hopefully.
Yeah. We were never blessed with that over here. Even, you know, sparse showings of Asian movies. You know, in the UK, you had like Seasons every now and again, which to you might sound sparse when, you know, in your experience, but from my perspective here, you know, it would have been heaven, thinking like The Prodigal Son was on TV, or Thunderbolt, or when a Jackie Chan movie. Obviously, we get shown more recent Jackie Chan movies every now and again. Rumble in the Bronx is on, your Rush Hours and all of that, but you know, the Prodigal Son would never have, would make sense, it would be a parallel dimension. So it's good fun. So I've said it a bunch on the show that the Sea Eagle is pretty shit, and then now you know as well, so don't buy it. And I'm not trying to be mean just for the sake of it. I mean, I was really like, oh my god, it's not even DVD quality. You know, so they crammed in too much on limited space.
Yeah, certainly very disappointing.
Yeah.
It's a Fortune Star channel. Fortune Star 1 and Fortune Star 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fortune Star 2 would be more in your... a wheelhouse.
That's a library.
Currently screening right now is Dance with the Dragon.
Oh yeah, Andy Lau, Wong Jing.
Then The Wild Ones is after. Yeah. Magnificent Warriors, Lord of East China Sea, Those Merry Souls, Carry On Pickpocket, Whining, The Contract, Long Arm of the Law 2.
Oh my god, Mike, I'm getting aroused. I'm getting aroused, Mike, stop it.
Pretty Ghost, The Lunatic, Sassate or Sexily, Truant Heroes.
Oh my god.
Goodbye, Mama.
Ooh, yeah. Come to Papa, Mama.
So that's like the whole day. And even the website's cool because it's got like the original posters.
Fucking
so they're advertising coming up. The 30 Million Rush, directed by Carl Macker.
Yeah, Lau Garland is in that.
And Eric Sang. And then Born to Gamble.
Oh, yes.
No, last weekend they showed Project A. And then Mr. Vampire 3, Her Fatal Ways 3, Chinatown Capers, City Squeeze.
Hell.
It's just like, yeah, those two channels, I think I'll be slightly addicted to them.
That calls for split screen. That's cause for motherfucking split screen, you know, Back to the Future style, part two, you know, when he's sitting in front of his split screen with like 12 channels, you know, Fortune Star 1, 2, 3, Golden Harvest 1, 2, 3, Shaw Brothers 1, 2, 3, you know.
And you know how much they cost as well per month?
No.
21 Hong Kong dollars.
Are you shitting me? That's nothing.
No, that's nothing. That's like,
how are they doing a profit? Profit.
That's as much as a VCD.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a typical cable thing where it's, you know, you have to have a minimum year contract.
Right. Yeah. But for that price, for that content, if you're a fan, you know.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's got to be genuinely. I'm actually quite excited already.
Fuckery, I'm leaving now.
See, if I invite you over to Hong Kong, I'll be like, hey, come over and hang out, Ken. If and I see... just end up sitting in my apartment.
Yeah, see like, Hong Kong.
Do you want to go out and see the giant Buddha train? Oh, in a minute, her fate always twos on.
Wow, I would love that. And hopefully they'll show some adult movies as well, you know, some genuine category 3. Unfortunately, there's not so much of that in the Fortune Star library, for instance. There's not much, you know, Charlie Cho sex movies, because I don't think no one owns those anymore. You know what I mean? They were so obscure and made by so obscure companies that there's no one company owning several category 3 movies and all of that. So
there's a Mayar channel. I don't know how exciting that one would be.
Oh, well, they have some good movies in their library. I mean, so after several of their DVDs, and they're doing good Blu-rays, one of the few companies in Hong Kong that actually have probably the money to do HD transfers of catalog titles, which is rare in Hong Kong. Normally, they don't have that money, and the cost isn't warranted based on the demand, but apparently Mayar has money to spend.
I think the Mayar channels do more modern films.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the Celestial Classics and Fortune Star. Obviously, well, yeah. Between them with Golden Harvest and the Shaw Brothers, they've got, you know, the library.
It would be so cool to watch those, because I expect the majority of those catalogue titles from Golden Harvest, not including Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan, are from, you know, unremastered prints, and to be honest I wouldn't have it any other way, because they still look good, and who, you know, it's such a huge catalog to remaster, but you know, I like my old Hong Kong movies to look a certain way, though, you know. They don't need to have the pristine fucking colors and all of that, and the blues need to almost bleed. They should be so strong that they bleed, you know, when you watch those movies on VHS. You know, the blues and the reds in Hong Kong movies are so strong that it looks like a painter, you know, mushed all over the screen and what have you. So,
check this for some Halloween viewing, 10 p.m. on the Fortune Star channel for you, Ken. This is just turning into like
what's on TV this week? The new show on Podcast on Fire Network.
Yeah, Mike reads the TV guide. It's turning into like movie porn for you. Hey, check this one. Look at the rack on this one. Ken. Halloween, 10 p.m. Mr. Vampire 4.
Oh yeah.
Which apparently, according to the fourth instalment in Hong Kong's favorite vampire horror comedy series, takes a slightly different tack from its predecessors.
It does indeed.
So I haven't watched it, but apparently Yuen Noir plays a gay vampire.
He does, and Lam Ching Ying is not in it. That's the slight different tack. We reviewed it on Vampire Chan. Season on the show. So it's Wu Ma versus Anthony Chan. Anthony Chan is a character in the first one. He's in the pre-reel guy with the glasses, and Wu Ma is his like a brother, Shaolin brother or Taoist brother, and they are so fun together because they are, you know, worst enemies and childish. So it's good fun. Wow. Well, Sleazy Cage, Rules of a TV Guide. That's, you know, King recently said that his Category 3 well has run dry. So maybe we should show him the TV, Hong Kong TV Guide, and, you know, just the prospect of so many movies on TV all the time will sort of tie him over until he finds new smut. It would help me if I was in that kind of situation, but wow. We'll certainly, no, Mike, make a note to set me up with the link the links to whatever you read read from, so we can share that with the listeners in the podcast post.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I believe the Celestial Channels are around in Singapore, maybe, I think, and Hong Kong, but also in Australia.
Really?
So potentially some listeners could actually get it.
Yeah. Whew. It's getting warm in here, Mike, so let's run. Let's finish this, baby. you're listening to Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire network, the expanding network that might include my Mike Reads the TV Guide, the podcast. Coming soon. But it's all located at podcastonfire.com, and the forum where you can give us feedback and all that and interact with us is podcastonfire.com/forum. Free registration, and it gets you access to more hours of Mike reading the TV guide in the members only in the members only section. 3 hours constantly off Monday, January the 12th at 8 a.m. Read it very dry. See how that how long that lasts. But you get bonus content hours of it in the members only section, including exclusive movie reviews from our Jack Chan specials, if you will. And you can like us and give us feedback on Facebook, facebook.com/POF network. And hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. And if you want to read my reviews, my mix of Guile Ninjas, Taiwan Black Movies, Hong Kong Horror, Taiwan Horror, and maybe some neglected Shaw Brothers directors within all of that, that's all at sogoodreviews.com. Video reviewed at the wonderful and smelly sleazykvideo.com. And I do my rants and talks about all of that on Twitter as well. Twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. Subscribe to our iTunes feed, which is linked in the show post and on the site. And also listen to us on Stitcher, Stitcher Radio, located at Stitcher.com. You can download it for free to your computer and to your smartphones and not your dumb phones. Sorry about that, Mike. But yeah, you'll have to live. But great application, all free. You can access the show, in my opinion, way more smoother than iTunes, for instance. So that's my personal thing. I'm not getting paid to say that. We're not getting paid by iTunes or Stitcher. That's just my personal opinion of how great I think Stitcher is. So, and we're in good company. We're on there with our friends over at VCinema Podcast and Concast and this Modcast Network as well. So good company, good radio. It was good having you on. Good having you on again, Mike. And it's in all seriousness, it's because we get along, all three of us, and when we have guests on, you know, it's that thing that it feels like you kind of never stop talking to each other when you get into the groove in regards to the topics that we cover and all of that. It feels like, you know, we did a podcast last week, and and having said that, I hope you can be on more frequently than twice a year, you know.
Yeah, biennial. Well, yeah. The thing is, at the moment, up until basically the end of this year, I've got studying to do, so it's going to be pretty busy. And then I'll be looking for another job and possibly relocating. Well, definitely relocating city, but possibly countries. So I don't think that'll be happening, but once I've settled in my new place, then I think that'll be especially if I'm in Hong Kong, like I keep saying, if that happens, then I think that'll be definitely more likely. Well, one, I'll have more time, and two, I'll have more things to talk about.
And you don't need to you don't need to buy movies anymore if you get all those channels, you know. Just save money.
One of the other things as well is that the Hong Kong Film Institute are doing 100 must-see Hong Kong movies. They made a list, and they're showing all of them over the next 4 years.
Right.
I think one movie screening every 2 weeks or something like that. And there's all kinds of classics in there. But there's loads of, you know, it goes from really early black and white films from like the 30s up to, I think, Election.
Right.
Like the last one, or The Mission or something like that. But yeah, there's a whole bunch. So I think I'll probably, and they're kind of not doing it in chronological order. They're kind of mixing them up when they screen them. So if I'm there for that, then I'll be checking those out as well, because that's really cheap as well. Things like $30 Hong Kong dollars per ticket.
Oh, that's a sweet price. For movies that you never got a chance to see in the cinema, you know, 5 years old or 20 years old, you know.
Well, I mean, for example, on Christmas Eve, they're showing Way of the Dragon.
Wow.
Which I think, I mean, it's not one of my, it's one of my least favourite Bruce Lee films. But that's an awesome Christmas Eve to me.
Oh yeah, sweet, yeah.
Going to check that out, I think that'd be ace.
And there is a difference when watching something on the big screen that you, someone on the big screen that you admire, even if it's someone's lesser movie, you know. I would watch Game of Death on the big screen if I got a chance, just to see, you know, the cardboard cutouts, you know, full on 35.
And you never know as well, because, you know, this is a Hong Kong Film Institute thing, and the ticket prices are so cheap, there's a good chance that these might actually be all kind of unremastered 35mm.
Which would be a great experience too, though.
That'd be great.
They have done. I don't know if it's the Institute, but there are some select, you know, movies that has gone through remaster and that they're showing. You know, as part of a, you know, a showcase or festival of sorts. I mean, even obscure like crime movies like Jumping Ash, I heard they remastered a few years ago. It's a movie co-directed by Josephine Chow. Xiao Fengfeng, who plays Jet Li's mother in Feng Sai-ok, if you remember her from that one. Comedian, but she directed at least that one, co-directed this, and out of all things to get remastered, you know. So, but it never showed up on DVD or anything like that, because, again, market demand and all, and it is what it is. But that'll be fun. We'd love to hear that, so... Till next time we speak, Michael. Thanks for coming on again. Well, thanks, Ashton. Thanks. You're the co-host. You're the Podcast on Fire Network as well. So you're still listed on the site. We love you. We love you we love you that much. We list you on the site as a ninja, nonetheless.
Thanks, Ken.